This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Mark Hamrick's here, Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst over at Bankrate. Steve Alexander just gave us some of the numbers we have on the jobs report. Mark, what jumps out at you? What are you noticing?
Well, I think the job market, John, has been remarkably stable over the last year or so, but it has been cooling a bit. And one of the phrases that I've sort of latched on to, which is a bit of an exaggeration, but, forgive me because I'm going to add the context, is that this is a no-fire, no-hire job market. Now, of course, we're hiring, and of course, people are being fired, but it is fairly stable, but there's also longer search times for people. We see that reflected in the continuing claims for unemployment benefits. But, you know, new claims for unemployment benefits are remarkably unchanged from a year ago. And just this morning, we had that Chicago-based firm, Challenger Gray & Christmas, indicating that the number of job cut announcements in January ultimately was fairly low for the way we're starting the year.
Is there a number that is ideal? I mean, you'll never get full employment, and maybe sometimes it's good that people are looking for work or bad. Can you give me a little context that way?
Well, let's take a look at recent history, John, because we saw an unemployment rate that was in the mid 3% range, and that was seen as being too tight or red hot. And we think about the remarkable and often devastating experiences of the past several years, whether it's COVID or inflation. And we saw what happens when the job market is too tight. We saw what happens when people cannot fill jobs, supply chain disruptions and the like. We saw that across just so many different categories. So those problems have been relieved. For the most part, yeah. I think if we go to a restaurant or a hotel, we're not quite so frustrated as we were a couple of years ago where we're asking, you know, where is everybody in terms of help?
Right. But about that then, so if everybody has a job, that's inflationary. You do want some people on the sidelines is what you're saying.
Well, you want to have balance. I think that is really the key, John. You want to have balance in the sense of employers being able to fill the jobs that they're looking to fill. And you want to have some reasonableness with respect to the outcomes that workers want to have fulfilled, whether it's, you know, let's say a reasonable pay increase if they change jobs. But, it, you know, when that is out of balance, ultimately, I don't think that's in anybody's favor. And we know, you know, ultimately, if we get into the very nuanced and more nerdy aspects of this conversation, then we have to ultimately talk about inflation and interest rates. And the Federal Reserve gets nervous if the job market is, in its view, overly tight.
What about wages then? Where are we relative to all of that?
Well, first of all, let's acknowledge that inflation continues to be the major Damocles of this economy, where it's just, you know, it's far from Goldilocks with respect to the price environment. We'll get an update next week on the consumer price index, by the way, and the monthly gains, both for the headline and the core, which excludes food and energy, are expected to be 0.3%. Now, if you just look at that from that vantage point alone, that's obviously an annualized increase of 3.6% on both, and that's far from the Federal Reserve's promised land of 2% of inflation. But of course, we've come down from the 9.1% annualized increase in 2022. But we also know there are these horrendous pockets of inflation in the economy, some of which are affected by, you know, recent events such as the rise in automobile insurance. Shelter costs remain, you know, a contributor to inflation, and we all have to live somewhere. We did have a pop in energy costs in December. That may have gone away in January. And obviously, you know, the sort of, again, pockets of inflation at the grocery store. And it all it takes is an $8 carton of eggs to ruin people's day, apparently, even though they may not be seeing quite the outsized increases in other departments of the grocery store. And, of course, used and new automobile prices increased in the previous CPI as well. And we're getting a lot of situations here, whether it's the flooding that we had in the sort of the south and, you know, in the latter part of last year, and now people needing to replace automobiles because of the horrific Los Angeles wildfires. These events are part of the economy picture as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Either car prices or car insurance or insurance in general. I think we're all going to feel that. Mark Hamrick is the Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst over at Bankrate.com. Okay, Mark, stay well. Thanks for your time today.
You too, my friend. Thanks so much.
Bree Fowler, Senior Writer at CNET.com. Got a lot of questions for you today, Bree. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, totally.
Well, there's two reasons to talk about Elon Musk, maybe. First, talk about OpenAI and what's happening in court.
Yeah, I mean, Elon is definitely all in the news these days. With OpenAI, his lawyers were in court this week as a federal judge is weighing a request by Elon Musk to give whether or not to issue a court order that would block ChatGPT from switching from a nonprofit company, more research-based, to a for-profit company. You know, Musk says that, you know, this is not what the company was intended for. He was an investor in it. The judge says it might be a bit of a stretch.
Elon wants it to continue to be non-for-profit?
Yes. It is worth mentioning that Elon has his own AI company now as well.
Well, what's the rub there then? What advantage does he have? I guess if this other one is a nonprofit, but it can still be revenue generating, it can still compete with him, right?
Sure, it can, but it can't. You know, when you're a for-profit company, it gives you more money to invest in equipment, infrastructure, that kind of stuff. Which AI is super energy consuming. It is very expensive to run and develop. So the more money that they can get their hands on, the more they can do.
Yeah, right. Well, then maybe we shouldn't ask Elon Musk what ought to happen here. What's his? And he was an initial investor. So is that it? He has a stake in this? He has a claim?
Well, he's saying that the move betrays the founding aims of OpenAI to be a public good benefiting research lab. That's his argument. But, you know, things change. OpenAI is looking to become a for-profit company now.
Speaking of the cost of running these artificial intelligence platforms, to what degree do you think DeepSeek has changed the playing field?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the big story right now in AI. DeepSeek, which is, you know, China-based, so there are some issues there. It claims that it can do things cheaper at a greater scale than the existing models out there. It claims that it was developed at a much lower cost than those, but it's kind of hard to verify that. It looks like maybe there were previous models and previous iterations that it kind of evolved from, so you kind of have to work those costs in as well. But, you know, it sent the markets all aflutter last week. NVIDIA stock dropped. It definitely is a huge thing, but now we're worried about, you know, dealing with Chinese influence and interference. And, you know, when it comes to data collection, AI collects way more data than TikTok ever could.
Really? So DeepSeek is actually hoovering up more of our data than TikTok was. TikTok is at least for the time being supposed to be banned in the United States. Are we going to do that then with DeepSeek?
Well, it remains to be seen. And TikTok is still out there. They got a stay of execution from Trump right when he got into office. So they're kind of business as usual right now until April.
Are people still able to sign up on TikTok, though? I thought that you it would still be operational if you had an account, but you couldn't get a new account.
Right. Yeah, you can't download the app from the app stores. There are ways to sideload it, though, and you can get to it from a web browser.
Back to, though, DeepSeek, how is it similar to or dissimilar then from maybe the threat, real or perceived, that TikTok represents?
Well, people are worried about anything that deals with China. And AI, the way that AI works is that AI swallows up whatever data you put into it, and it becomes part of the AI. And you can't claw that back out of there. It's not like deleting a video from TikTok or, you know, maybe even moving data from servers overseas. This is much more complicated. And it's also, while it is open source and people can look at the code and
there
look at
are.
What it's doing, you know, get a look under the hood, that is a lot to do. I've been talking to experts this week, and, you know, it's a mammoth undertaking.
You mean in order, it seemed to me like they were giving away the code, that you could use it, you could adapt it, you could change it,
yeah.
Which is certainly different than the, say, algorithm for TikTok. So it's going to be out there, and we can
right.
put our head in the sand, but the world's going to have this powerful, less expensive tool for artificial intelligence. Should we,
right.
and Texas, I believe, is banning it, but I wonder if that's really in our best interest.
So there also is a bill that is about to be introduced in Congress by a representative that would keep it off of federal devices, which was kind of the first thing that happened with TikTok, too. You saw states mandate that people couldn't use it on their work phones, and then at the federal level as well. I'll be real interested to see where this gets going. But the problem is that companies, you know, the experts that I've been talking to, companies will get lots of different models. And you as a consumer, you know, you may be talking to a chatbot or some kind of avatar through a website. You don't know what model they're running. You know, they can swap out models depending on what the needs are. So you might be talking to DeepSeek. You might be talking to a version of ChatGPT. There's really no way to know. And it's on you as a consumer to protect your data.
What's your thought then when I'm on a website and I'm trying to get some information and the chatbot pops up in the corner and it says, hey, what do you need? Can I help you? And I generally don't engage with that. What do you think about the efficiency of that, the help that that provides, or maybe the compromise that it represents to me?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes chatbots that are run by AI can be more helpful than an actual person overseas, you know, in a call center. But what you need to do is, just like when you're talking to a person on a phone or anything else, you need to be careful what data you hand over. You know, it's okay to ask AI for directions or for recipes or things like that. But if it asks you, you know, for your social security number or even your birthday to verify account information, you really should think twice, just like you would with a real person.
Do you think there's, I don't know, what's your assessment of Elon Musk and half a dozen college undergrads rooting around the Treasury Department's computer system? I understand that a couple of them have read-only access, and we're being told not to worry too much about any compromise here, but people, I think, naturally are. Anyway, that's the lay of the land. What's your thought about that?
I am definitely worried about this. You know, the more people that have access to data, the more likely it is to leak or get shared or, you know, find its way to someone who shouldn't have it. And, you know, we're talking about social security numbers, private information, tax information. You know, the people that normally deal with this kind of stuff in the federal government, they have a career doing this, and they've been trained in best practices, and it's, you know, this is their job. And arguably they should be trusted, but you just bring in more people who haven't necessarily been through all that, you're really opening the door to a lot of risk that you shouldn't.
When Elon Musk took over Twitter, he was able to rip into the workforce, sometimes firing whole departments. Over half of the people that worked there lost their jobs. Twitter's still up and running. I wonder if, in fact, he'll be able to, with access to the computers, gain the same sort of efficiencies that we'll still have in the federal government. It might be a little glitchy. It might be not as good, but we will be thankful for the trade it made. It helped Twitter, at least economically. Twitter's still not profitable, or I don't think it is, but you get my point. That's a long question, too.
Right.
Wonder if there will be some good that will come of this.
I mean, cost-cutting can be great, but you need to be frugal, too, as my mom would say. You know, you want to spend money on what's important. And, you know, people, these are people who have had long careers who thought they would retire. You know, we all know state and federal workers, like, they're not in it for the money. They're in it because it's safe and stable and because they think they're doing a good thing. There are ways of phasing people out. People retire, people take buyouts, that's fine. But when you do this kind of wholesale slash and burn like it, he did at Twitter. Twitter was just awful for a very long time, and arguably still is. They lost a lot of their people, and it's very, very toxic. And the people that are there, generally, you know, it's not the friendliest environment these days. So I don't necessarily want the federal government acting like that.
The vilification of federal employees is unfortunate. I know some people that work in the federal government at various agencies and offices, and I don't think ill of them at all. I certainly know more than people in the private sector, for crying out loud. But we seem to be going down that road right now. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. You can click on these articles at CNET.com. Have a good weekend, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Parody joins us now. He's the Future of Work correspondent at Business Insider. This is sort of a pet topic for this show these days, work from home, work in the office, work hybrid, and how hard are you working? And what's that like anymore? The headline in one story is, "Bosses are done, Karen, how you feel?" Okay, Tim, that's your story. Welcome to WGN's Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
What's the story here? What are you hearing? What are you finding?
Well, the folks we're talking to were saying that, you know, there are some CEOs who thought they did a lot during the pandemic to bend over backwards for workers in terms of flexible work and checking in on how people were doing and sort of talking a lot about work-life balance, even things like DEI. And, you know, we're hearing from some experts that some bosses are just kind of feeling like they've done enough and they want to go back to a bit more of an old school approach, which is a little bit more like you'll work, you know, where we say, when we say, et cetera. So
I get that the bosses, for a whole host of reasons, want employees to come back into the office permanently or much more often than they have been. But you're not just speaking about the location. You're talking about the attitude when they get back there. What are these employees saying they're feeling when they go back into the office?
I mean, it's a mix, right? Like you would expect, some people really love it. Some people feel more productive. Other people say I'm more productive at home because there are fewer distractions and I don't have the commute time. And it really runs the gamut. But certainly, I think a lot of employees enjoyed having a little bit more autonomy than what some of them feel like they're having today.
Well, one of the quotes in your story is, we have this percentage of bosses that are sort of like, oh, the pandemic is over. You had your fun being treated like humans. Now it's time to get back to work. And that's from some employee out there that you all talk to?
That's actually from a person who researches, who's a researcher who looks at the workplace and also looks at empathy in particular. And was talking about kind of that lack of that in some cases.
Yeah, which predated the pandemic, a lack of empathy maybe, at least in some offices. We're all human beings. Some are better at it than others. But I mean, that's a skill set that goes a long way to making the office a better place to work. And maybe it was ratcheted up a little bit, even though we were distant during the pandemic, because we were all going through a pandemic, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure there are some bosses who maybe thought it was kind of a performative thing that they had to go through it. And certainly there would have been bosses who really felt that way and really wanted to check in on the well-being of their workers. But it does feel as though with some of these arrangements, like you alluded to, companies calling workers back to the office, maybe even 5 days a week, and we've seen this with the federal buyout that you were just talking about and the RTO orders there, some bosses are saying, okay, we made accommodations when times were really tough, but now that we're getting back to some level of normalcy, it's time for you to, to return to the older way.
The Empathy Dilemma is the title of one book out there that you're referencing here, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little torn between this. I guess everybody has their own filter, their own work experience. It would seem to me like bosses could, should be, maybe have been as accommodating as they can be. But at the end of the day, they're not your mommy. They're your boss. Go to work, do your job. I'm not here to be your emotional support pet. I'm here to be the boss to make sure you do the job. And I'm going to be as empathetic as I can, but job one is not that. So I understand the dichotomy there, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the experts, you're right, and I think a lot of experts who look at this say all of that is reasonable enough to be able to say I'm the boss and I need you to do these things. What I think a lot of people who research this would say is that you get more out of people when you sort of give them a little bit of, deference to their humanity, and they need to have a little flexibility to pick up their kid at soccer, or they need to do this and that. But ultimately, and I've spoken to workers who have said the same thing, that when they feel like they have flexibility, they're more willing to go the extra mile for the boss as well, because it feels then kind of like a two-way street.
100%. But what an interesting phrase, deference to their humanity, right? I mean, my goodness, of course, of course. But the line is between deference to humanity and you're just taking advantage of me being a little easier on you than I need to be. And I guess that's the navigation. That's maybe the hard part for managers. I'm being a little maybe sympathetic to the dilemma that managers find themselves in right now, because they're the ones that have to figure out how to get these people back, make them happy. But I know what makes you happy is you're at home, and you're not going to be at home now. So buck up and do the job, right? I mean, that's the internal conversation these managers must be having.
Sure. And a lot of managers will tell you, and the people who study this will say as well, that it is harder to manage people when they're not right in front of you, when you can't see what they're doing, and you have that maybe creeping fear in the back of your mind that, you know, they're sitting around watching The View or something like that. And when, you know, in reality, a lot of the return to office discussion involves that as well, not just, you know, innovation and team building and company culture and things like that, but also just the fear, perhaps, that some people are taking advantage of. And, and certainly some people are, the people you alluded to who have more than one remote job or something like that. But from folks I talked to, that sounds like it's a minority, and that most people would, or many times people say that they can be very productive when they're at home in their own environment.
I'll just read this text that's come in even as I was promoting that you were going to come on, and maybe this is a federal employee, I don't know. There's a baseline of anxiety out there right now anyway. John, yes, bosses are done caring how we feel because they have the total support of an administration which is anti-consumer, anti-worker, anti-union, anything that helps people. It's literally all about the dollar right now. Not safety, not rights, not thriving in life. The boss has the upper hand, and most bosses like it that way. Am I wrong? Let's take the politics out of that and answer the last part of that question. Bosses like it that way. Am I wrong? What does your story say about that, Tim?
Well, I mean, the job market right now for a lot of people who are you know, quote unquote desk workers is tougher than it had been a few years ago. So I think workers are feeling stuck in many cases. They've been in their jobs longer than they had been during the time of the Great Resignation. And so the opportunity, to go elsewhere is harder than it had been. And so I think that some people feel as though they really don't have the flexibility to just walk if their boss says, I need to be back in the office, as an example.
But you would agree that if the bosses like it that way, then those are bad bosses. You alluded to the fact that you'll get more out of your employees if you treat them as well as you can, right?
Right, and I think you made a good point, too, that people don't necessarily need to be coddled. These are adults, and these are people who have a job to do and are paid for that. But, there is a large amount of research out there that shows that giving people, a little bit of, again, sort of deference to their humanity would really help people go the extra mile and help get a greater work product, greater innovation, greater teamwork, all that sort of stuff.
Talking to Tim Parody from BusinessInsider.com, in 2024, you wrote about half of CEOs said in a survey from Business Solver, which tracks empathy in the workplace. Who knew? That their company's workplace culture was toxic. Half of the CEOs said their company's workplace culture was toxic. That's the CEOs. 37% of the chiefs also said empathy did not have a place in the workplace. That's shocking. While more than 30% of HR executives and a quarter of employees agreed that empathy did not belong on the job. Are you kidding me? What's that all about?
Well, it is. I was surprised by those findings as well. Business Solver is kind of the gold standard in terms of one of them, I guess, in terms of looking at empathy in workplace. And it is surprising given what we've been through with the pandemic. And again, to the research that shows that when you do have this, I guess, more balanced approach toward people, that you ultimately get more out of them. But I guess some people are kind of old school in that way, and they just want to have a more traditional meat and potatoes, I'm the boss and what I say goes.
You also raised the specter of FOBO, which just is another layer of things to worry about in the workplace. That's fear of becoming obsolete with AI and all. It's quite a story. Mm-hmm. Tim Parody is writing The Future of Work correspondent at BusinessInsider.com. Nice to talk to you today, Tim. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio, and we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's some good news about the retail vacancy rate in Chicago's Loop. Cranes reports the rate held steady in 2024 at just under 30%. The vacancy rate is compiled by Stone Real Estate, a local retail brokerage firm. The Loop retail vacancy rate was 29.8% in 2024, down from 30.1% in 2023. Since March of 2020, retailers have vacated 222 storefronts in the Loop district. Of the 1,307 storefronts, 449 are empty. The report says that adds up to about 1.3 million square feet of vacant space. Northbrook-based Allstate says it expects $1.1 billion in losses from the California wildfires around Los Angeles. The company says reinsurance will help reduce Allstate's overall losses. The insurer hasn't said whether it plans to raise rates in California, but Illinois-based State Farm is seeking a 22% increase. State Farm says it's already paid out more than $1 billion for California fire claims and expects to pay out significantly more. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's go to TikTok.
Hello. Today I'm doing a 3-day juice cleanse. This is day one.
About that juice cleanse. If you think it's making you healthier, sorry. A new study at Northwestern University says it may be doing the opposite. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, social media is flooded with videos about how to do a juice cleanse. They've been the do-it-yourself rage for a long time.
Yeah, I would say for decades.
That's Dr. Melinda Ring at Northwestern University's Osher Center for Integrative Health, and she was a juice cleanse fan.
I feel good when I've done them. It makes you feel like you're energizing your body, but there's really been very little data about it.
So she and her team at Northwestern did a study, which was just published in the journal Nutrients, and found the pressed juice diet, even for only 3 days, can cause problems. Okay, but you know, Doc, the TikTokers swear it eliminates inflammation.
Instead, what we saw was a significant increase into more pro-inflammatory types bacteria.
She says the problem is the pressed juices remove the fiber.
Unfortunately, when that fiber was removed, when sugars were concentrated, even though they're natural sugars, the juice only really allowed those bacteria that thrive on those sorts of sugars, which is linked to inflammation, it allowed them to multiply.
So, juicers,
you just have to get away from this idea that I can do a detox, I can fix everything that I've done wrong, eating fast food, eating processed food, by doing a juice cleanse. That is clearly not the case here.
Oh, and regarding kids,
they need that fiber. So I would stay away from anything like a juice cleanse, and even in general, limiting juice for kids. And then even better than that, just eat the whole fruits and vegetables themselves.
So the apple instead of the apple juice.
Yeah, an apple a day, right?
She's the doctor, and this TikToker is not.
It tastes horrible, but we're getting cleansed, okay?
On the food calendar, today is National Frozen Yogurt Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Attention area talk show hosts. If you want to get people to call or text into your show, talk about what it's like working in the office these days. Wow. John, trust me, I'm not a boss and could honestly say, yep, lazy people will be lazy when not monitored. 262 says, bosses don't care about you, so I'm glad I'm retiring this year. The next one, come on, people are adults. Do they really need their hand held? Stop whining, says another. Go to work. John, they think bosses are greedy. What about workers that do little every day and get a check? 262 says, I wonder why there's a lack of empathies these days. I wonder what's changed. 773 says, since when does everybody have to be nice? And this is a refrain heard at my house sometimes. As Don Draper once said to Peggy, after she accused him of never saying thank you, all together now, that's what the money's for. It's 1253. Nothing will improve your home's value and energy efficiency like new windows or patio doors. You want the best. You want the company Lou Manfredini recommends, Gilkey Windows, Chicago's only family-owned, direct-to-consumer manufacturer, so it's no middleman markup. That means more savings for you. Gilkey builds the highest quality fiberglass and vinyl windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Independently verified, one of the most energy-efficient windows, and now $400 off every window, $1,000 off every patio door. Lots of financing options, some with no money down. These are the best windows you can get. You'll see them at a Gilkey showroom. You don't need an appointment. Palatine, 7 days a week, Chicago Ridge, Monday through Saturday. Call 888-3-GILKEY. 888-3-GILKEY or log on to Gilkey.com. Fiberglass, vinyl, just make sure you choose Gilkey. Art Velasquez joins us right now, the CEO at Baja Foods. They've got a new product out, brand new. You'll see it at Costco soon if it's not already there. Art, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Baja Foods is a division of Azteca. Is that right?
It's a separate company, but it's within the family ownership of the different companies that we own.
This is a Chicago-based, family-owned company, and you all have launched a new brand called Chef Gustavo. Tell me about that.
So at Baja Foods, we primarily have been making the products that we make, like enchiladas, burritos, quesadillas, and taquitos for other companies, and we either package them under their brand or they take our enchiladas, for example, and make frozen meals under a handful of different brands. And we got an opportunity to talk to a broker involved with Costco, and they introduced us to the idea of coming up with a our own branded meal to present to Costco. And we started doing that in April. And we were able to get approval from the Midwest region of Costco, which has 109 stores in about 14 states, in end of August.
This must be huge for you, right? You've got this new brand out. You've got a product out. Costco wanted you to develop something for them. It's going to be, it's in the stores, I understand, as of Wednesday. So it may be too soon to tell what the uptake is going to be, but you must be very optimistic right now.
Yes, my team did a great job in developing a high quality enchilada meal. So we went for an authentic experience, and at the same time, make it all natural, no artificial colors, antibiotic free chicken.
So am I going to see this in the frozen food section then of Costco, the Chef Gustavo chicken and cheese enchilada with salsa verde? Is that right?
Yes, you'll see that in Costco stores as of now.
Chicken and cheese enchiladas with salsa verde. I like your chances. Is this a popular category right now, Mexican food?
Yes, it's one of the most popular in the country, and enchiladas are a staple. They're almost like the Mexican lasagna.
Yeah, that's well put. I presume you've got other products then in the pipeline?
We do. We have some quesadillas that we're working on, and all the other projects we're working on are for other companies doing things with our product.
Art Velasquez is the CEO at Baja Foods. Okay, check that out when you're shopping Costco. And let's stay in touch, Art. Congratulations, and report back to us soon. Let us know how things go.
All right, John. Thanks for having me.
CEO at Baja Foods, Art Velasquez.